I'm Lieutenant Jim McAndrew from the Secretary of the Air Force and Classification and Review Team, and we've been asked to look into an incident by the GAO for the Secretary of the Air Force in a GAO investigation revolving around something called the Roswell incident that's been highly publicized. There's been books written on it, movies, newspaper articles, things like that. And we've come through our investigation, we've come to believe that they're describing an event that you participated in 1959. You were a physician at the Walker Air Force Base Hospital in Roswell, New Mexico. So I guess I'd just like to start off with asking you, when did you join the Air Force and when were you at Walker Air Force Base?
My name is Charles A. Coltman, Jr., M.D., Colonel, USAF, M.C., retired. I entered the United States Air Force on 13 September 1977 and retired on that date in 1957 and retired 20 years later in 1977.
Okay, so you're Colonel retired Medical Corps.
Yeah, I left.
Is this for Lieutenant?
Yes.
Can I make a...
I need my to restate my time of service, 13 September 1957 to that date in 1977 when I retired from the United States Air Force.
Okay. What was your, during your Air Force career, what major jobs did you hold?
I was had three PCS assignments. One was as a flight surgeon at Walker Air Force Base, Roswell, New Mexico, from 1957 to 1959. The second was...
Do you remember the month in 1959?
That I left? It was in July that I left.
Okay. All right.
June or July. It was somewhere like that.
Okay.
And then I left there and was an Air Force sponsored resident at Ohio State University from 1959 to 1963. And I finished my residency and then was PCS to Wilford Hall USAF Medical Center in San Antonio, Texas, where I spent 14 years as in various jobs as staff hematologist, chief of hematology oncology service, and chairman of the Department of Medicine. I retired from the United States Air Force in 1977 and joined the faculty at the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio, and I've been jointly working at the university and at the Cancer Therapy and Research Center since that time.
Okay. All right. So the particular time we're interested in is the time when there was an incident at Walker Air Force, near Walker Air Force Base, and it was in May of 1959, May 21st, 1959. Do you remember this incident in involving a balloon crash?
Yes, I remember it vividly. I was in bed at home early in the morning when I got a call from Sergeant Wormwood, who was the NCOIC of the Flight Surgeon's Office. And he said, Dr. Coltman, there's been a balloon accident north of Roswell, and we need to go investigate it. And I thought he was kidding me and hung up on him. He immediately called back and said, Dr. Coltman, I'm serious. There's been a balloon accident north of Roswell, and we have to go investigate it. I'll be by to pick you up. And I put on my flight suit and boots and my hat and picked up my flight surgeon kit. And Sergeant Wormwood came by in the big blue cracker box ambulance. And we drove to the site north of Roswell where there was a large deflated balloon lying on the ground and a the gondola of a the balloon was lying on its side. And there were two crew members from this balloon who were sitting on the ground next to it. And they were bruised and banged up, but not seriously injured. The story, as I further understood it, was that they left Holloman Air Force Base in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and were
Alamogordo,
New Mexico, and they were they were riding in a balloon, and they were doing touch and go landings north of Roswell when a gust of wind came along and dumped the gondola over and the occupants out onto the ground. The balloon was deflated, and they were. I further understood that they were being tracked by a truck with staff from Holloman Air Force Base, where they. And so they were aware of the fact that the balloon had had this accident. As best I remember it, they were there at that time as well, and they were assisting the crew by the time I got there.
I've got a photograph of you. And this, tell me if this looks familiar at all. Is that...
Yeah, that, well, I didn't see it in that, mm-hmm. in that format because, they weren't standing in the gondola.
That was taken like a day prior on another training mission.
Okay. That, I mean, that, that certainly, looks like what I saw lying on the ground on its side. And in fact, I didn't see individuals standing in it as are shown in this photograph, because it was tilted over and they were sitting on the ground next to it. They weren't terribly injured, and we took them to the flight surgeon's office where I did complete physical evaluation. I subsequently called Holloman Air Force Base and spoke to Colonel Stapp, who was the person who was responsible for their activities.
He's pretty famous by that time.
Yes, he was the fastest man on Earth, rode the rocket sled and had rapid deceleration and so forth. So he was well known to me, and so I called, and he was anxious to get them back to Holloman. I described to him what had happened, and I pointed out that there were some minor injuries, but I didn't think there was anything serious. Then as I recall, they went back to Holloman. My memory about what happened after that is somewhat remote, but or is somewhat clouded, they were anxious to get them back as quickly as possible, and I think that's exactly what happened.
Okay, let's talk about the people who were on board the balloon. Do you remember who these guys were?
Well, I know, I didn't remember their names. But I know one of them was an instructor pilot for the balloon, and the other was a student pilot. The student pilot, as I understood it, was learning how to fly the balloon in order to engage in an Air Force mission. I subsequently knew that that there was a mission to take someone in a balloon to extraordinary altitude, and one mission involved measuring cosmic radiation from very high altitude and its potential effect on space travelers. And the other, there was another fellow who worked with the Colonel Staff, and his name was Simon. And it was, I believe, that Simon was the one who went up to extreme altitude, 102,000 feet or something like that, and then bailed out of the balloon and free fell to determine whether one could survive in the cold atmosphere in order to open the parachute at a level that was safe to then land, and that I think was probably preliminary to determine whether or not space travel was feasible.
Okay. I've got the medical records of the patient who was injured on this particular accident, so I'm going to give you a chance to review it.
Okay.
So the patient who was injured in that balloon accident was Colonel Dan Fulgham. He was on temporary duty from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base to Holloman to train as a backup pilot for Colonel Joe Kittinger, who did high altitude work. So what you can remember about his injury, and having reviewed the official his official medical records, what do you recall from his injury?
Well, I recall that he had a head abrasion and contusion. I don't now clearly recall that his protective hat was crushed in producing the hematoma which he had on his forehead. At the time that I saw him, he had some swelling of his forehead. It wasn't as extensive a swelling as I see in the picture, as I recall. And this was a picture that must have been taken at Holloman.
That was taken back at Wright-Patterson about 4 days after.
Yeah. Well, he did not have that extensive swelling. Here I see he's got hematomas or bruises around his eye, under his eyes, and his eyes are almost swollen shut. So I presume that he did have bleeding into his forehead, which I saw immediately, and that it began to get more extensive and cause the swelling.
Okay.
As time went on, but he clearly had an injury to his head that was substantial, but not serious. He had no neurologic abnormalities, and there was no reason to retain him in the hospital. And I didn't admit him to the hospital, and arranged for the two of them to go back to Wright-Patterson fairly quickly afterwards.
Okay. But that's kind of, you see that injury, did you see that injury very often? Or would that be hematoma to the forehead.
Well...
That'd be a common injury?
Well, of course, a balloon accident is an uncommon event, and I've never seen one before nor since, and I think an automobile accident where you hit the windshield would create that sort of an injury. And this may be what it would look like a few days afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly that's compatible with that sort of an injury.
So getting to the scene there at the hospital, what type of hospital was this? Was it a large hospital or small?
It's a small 50-bed hospital, cantonment type, with long corridors and individual wards off these corridors. It's the standard World War II type of hospital that was put at the end of the runway of Air Force bases all over the country, and it was 50 beds. Had a hospital commander who was a colonel, had a full staff of physicians and nurses. Ed Bradley, who was my cohort in the flight surgeon's office, had taken a quick course in diagnostic radiology, and he read the x-rays. I was involved in looking, because of my experience as a flight surgeon, became involved in caring for all the patients with head and neck or primarily ear problems and eye problems. So we sort of each did our subspecialty thing. Ed Bradley had a year of straight medical internship. I'd had a year of rotating internship before I came to San Antonio in 57 and went through the School of Aviation Medicine at Randolph, and then went from there to Roswell, where I became flight surgeon.
Okay. Talking about the staff there, there's been reports that a nurse observed a patient in one of the examining rooms, operating rooms there, that did have a big head, and she became quite startled by seeing this. Do you recall any nurse being involved in the treatment of this particular patient, or?
I can't recall that the patients left the flight surgeon's office unless it was to get a skull x-ray, which I think we got, and chest x-ray. We did some minor things to try to convince ourselves that these weren't serious, although clinically they weren't terribly serious injuries. I think his appearance in this photograph, taken at Wright-Patterson, is more frightening than it was at the time I saw him initially. But I can imagine that a nurse may have seen him, but I frankly can't recall the circumstances, because we didn't have any nurses in the flight surgeon's office. We had an NCOIC and a number of corpsmen and secretaries and typists and that sort of thing. We had an optometrist who worked out of the flight surgeon's office, but that was it.
Okay. On the morning this happened, like you said, this is an unusual event of a balloon accident. Do you remember anyone asking questions or being inquiring who these people were and why were they here?
I don't recall that, because I was primarily concerned about the people who were there and who were injured, and not. I don't recall having had any discussions with anyone in the surrounding area, and they certainly were, except for their minor injuries, were otherwise normal people.
Okay. In your time when you were there at Walker, did you ever have any involvement with the local morticians in town or any type of contracting or anything like that?
No, I don't ever remember any contact with the morticians. You had indicated that the mortician had provided ambulance service for the base to transport injured Air Force personnel to the base hospital. I frankly was totally unaware of that contract, nor have I ever had contact with a mortician from Roswell, New Mexico, or at any time during my stay there.
Okay. Also, during that particular morning, whatever you can recall, do you recall there being any altercations, like in one of these quarters you described, or involving this balloon crew with any civilians or anyone else?
No, none whatsoever.
Okay. And while you were working that morning, how many doctors were present?
Well, I was the only doctor who was involved at the flight surgeon's office that morning, and I was on call, and they didn't call anyone else, and I went to the scene and then went back to the base.
So to your knowledge, you're the only doctor that was there?
That's
there
was
right. No doctors from another base or any strangers in the hospital?
Well, I don't know whether there were physicians riding in that Air Force truck that was tracking this balloon. I don't recall that, and I there may have been, but I don't recall it.
Okay. In your time at Walker, do you ever remember them bringing crash victims, deceased crash victims, into the hospital in body bags?
Just before I arrived, there was a KC-97 tanker that was flying with a crew, and there was a team of navigators who were in the KC-97 doing low-level navigational flights, and they were, I guess, trying to prepare for flying into enemy territory at low level. And this tanker flew into a mountain in Arizona, and I remember Ed Bradley who was flight surgeon there before I got there, was responsible for that aircraft accident investigation, and they flew into a cloud, and inside the cloud was this mountain, and they essentially killed everyone on board instantly. I recall during that aircraft accident investigation, they had a great deal of difficulty identifying individuals, and there, as I remember Ed Bradley's description of it, the largest piece of any individual was what they found in the form of boots, flying boots with feet in them. It was during that identification process that Ed Bradley, in discussing with the FBI, got word that if they had footprints on the individuals who were flying, that they would have been in a position to identify most of the people, the victims. And in fact, that aircraft accident investigation resulted in the Air Force then, and to my knowledge, up to the present time, taking footprints on everyone on flying status.
Sure do.
And so I can't imagine that they would have brought back those body parts in body bags because they were just small fragments of people. So to my knowledge, while I was there, there was no aircraft accident that resulted in the death of people and then having them brought to the hospital in body bags.
Okay. Was there a morgue in the hospital?
Yeah, well, there was, I think. Yeah, there was. But
okay.
That's pretty unclear to me because I
okay.
I wasn't I didn't do much inpatient work, and so I didn't have patients dying and then getting autopsied and so on.
Would they perform autopsies at the hospital there at Walker?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I think they might have had a pathologist come in from town to do it, but I don't think we had a pathologist on our staff.
Getting back to the nurse, there's a couple where this individual describes a nurse who says she saw these, they call them foreign bodies at the hospital. A name's been provided, and the name is Naomi Self. Does that ring a bell at all to you?
Not at all.
Okay. We've also have a roster of people who were present at the hospital in 1959. Your name's on it, and everyone else who was there.
Yeah, I know Tim German, myself, Ed Bradley, Clarence Edmonds. And Carswell, Chuck Defoe, and Leonard Johnson. He was the lab officer. Ed Ledbetter, he was the pediatrician, ultimately went on into pediatrics, came to Wilford Hall. And, you know, the incredible aspect of this is that when I was at Wilford Hall, there were probably 7 or 8 staff physicians, and I think 6 out of the 7 became regular officers in the United States Air Force and stayed on. I don't know what major. Larry Petz was there. Dan Parmer. Remember Lillian Stone.
You remember Ida Bell Wilson?
Yeah, I believe I do.
What do you remember about her? Anything in particular?
No, I just remember the name. Okay. More than I remember the individual.
Okay. I just have a picture of an old Cracker Box ambulance, and I'm sure that the type you guys used, or...
Yeah.
They're about some kind of...
Yeah.
Old Korean War style ambulance. These are actually pictures of some of the communication trucks that these guys used. Actually, that's an ambulance that they converted to a communications van, and that's what they did to the back of it. Like that. Other trucks they used. Picture of an ambulance. The other description the person gives is putting, he seemed to think that there was wreckage in the back of an ambulance. While you were there, did you ever put aircraft wreckage in the back of an ambulance? Do you remember?
No, there was no wreckage. I mean, it was this balloon, a gondola, which was on its side, as I remember it, and the balloon, which was deflated. There was no wreckage anywhere.
Okay, now I'm just obligated to ask you this, and I'll ask you. While you were there at any time, was there ever anything that could be... the charges are that there were these, what they're calling space aliens at the hospital. Did you ever see anything that would resemble this, or not resemble, but that would be a secret, some kind of secret activity where there were people moving around with anything like this?
Absolutely not. I mean, I would have been aware of it had it happened, and it just didn't happen.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to add?
No. Were you ever able to find the aircraft accident?
Not yet.
Investigation
not yet.
Forms that I started to fill out?
Not yet. We'll have to
I don't know whether they ever served.